This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and today, thanks to two outstanding art exhibition spaces in the Triad, we get to enjoy a worldly perspective. Ambleside Gallery in Greensboro presents Chinese artist Guanwei Xing, and the Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art brings Mexico City native artist Pedro Lash to Winston-Salem. Sika also gives us a close-up and personal take on the magic of the South and the Southerners who live here from Tennessean photographer and videographer Jeffrey Oliver Whetstone. First off, though, we head to the north of China. This week, world-class Chinese master watercolorist Guanwei Xing returns to the U.S. for the Friday opening of his exhibit of new works at Ambleside Gallery in Greensboro, where he's exclusively represented in this country. Guan was born in Jilin Province in 1940. He entered the Luxem Fine Arts Academy in 1960, and just 2 years later, he was graduated a master. The level of detail Guan achieves in the watercolor portraits he paints is truly breathtaking, and his work has been favorably compared to that of the legendary American realist painter Andrew Wyeth. Today, as a leading watercolorist in China, Guan's paintings are in the permanent collection of the National Art Museum, Beijing. His most famous painting, Peasants Viewing the Opera, 8 years in the making, will be included in the Ambleside exhibition. In it, the rapt facial expressions of dozens of audience members are expertly wrought, the artist inviting you into the amazement of each individual peasant, from toddlers to village elders, vicariously experiencing the action on stage. Guan is joined in the studio by his translator, Wang Xiaolian. Were your interests in art sparked early?
是的，我是出生在农民家庭。
I was born in a peasant family. At that time, we were very poor. My parents were no artists, but I had a desire to express my ideas, my thoughts, with a pen to draw something.
Did that create any tensions within the family that you were interested in pursuing art at a time when those around you were maybe working and doing other things?
No. 家里父母很支持我画。小的时候,
well, at that time, I was not, to be honest, I'm not painting, actually. I want to paint it something that I want to express in my mind. My parents supported or were fond of my drawing everywhere. Sometimes,
脏脏的,但是像西瓜,
when I ate some watermelon, some juice would run down my stomach, belly, and it looked like a watermelon. That would make my parents laugh.
妈妈就装作生气的样子，领着我到河沟去洗澡、洗衣服。
My mom would pretend to be very angry and took me to the river to have a bath.
That's great. I want to learn more about watercolors as a medium. What exactly are watercolors, and are there various types of watercolors?
有基本上说是
Basically, they are not the same. They are different.
但它里边追求的艺术本质，比如说色彩、造型，又是相同的。
But the nature that they try to pursue about the art is the same.
但它媒介不一样，这是用水。
But because the medium of watercolor is water, that is unique to this kind of art.
What aspect of watercolor painting do you enjoy most?
Any excellent painting is a mixture of your idea, your creation, and your techniques.
What is an example of a technique you've had to master along the way to arrive at your current level of painting?
就是用水来表现
Or what distinguishes watercolor from the other types of arts is that watercolor is transparent, when you paint something, and then you can paint another layer.
上面画一笔，下面就看不见了。
But you can also see the first layer, so we can call it transparent. But the other types of art are, maybe I can call it opaque. You can cover something, the second layer, but you cannot see the first layer.
Could you talk a little bit about the importance of art in Chinese society?And I know, you know, from the urban to rural settings,、yeah. I know it's very different, but in general, could you speak to the importance of art in Chinese society?
那是绘画是整体艺术的其中之一，它和艺术一样起到陶冶人们性情的这些作用。
Painting is just one kind of arts. It educates and cultivates people.
是人类文明的表现。
Art is the mark or the landmark of people's or humans' civilization. At the very beginning of the human's history, paintings or drawings on the rocks can also be found now.
另外有图案留下的岩壁画，这是岩石壁画。
I think it is the symbol of civilization. It is the aim or purpose people pursue the nature of life. They try to pursue the beauty in the nature of people themselves.
到了文明社会就更表示这个艺术上是人的文明之表现。
Today, it is obviously a symbol of civilized society.
I want to talk about one of those symbols of our society, one of your most famous paintings, The Peasants Viewing the Opera. That's going to be included in the Ambleside Gallery exhibition. This title alone paints a really nice image in my mind. I'm wondering, how did this subject...come to you, and what your thoughts are, what comes to mind when you view this work today?
This picture describes the life of myself. The young girl in the center of the picture refers to or stands for him.
It's me.
Oh.
When I was young, I was very poor in my family, and the neighbors and the villagers supported me so that I could grow up. When I became an artist, I wanted to express my feelings of gratitude.
但是用通过一幅画来表达这个时间
空间，因为几十年的事
情是很困难的。它比起写小说和电视来讲，它要困难多了。
In one motionless picture,
there is so much that goes on in that picture that I could look at it for hours and see something new. How large is the canvas?
2 meters × 1.3 meters.
2 meters times 1.3.meters.
Okay.
在水彩里属于极大幅的作品。
It is quite a large scaled painting in watercolor.
所以也引起了极大的赞赏。评论多极了。
So people sing high praise for this one.
Smoking Old Man was another of the paintings that I really, really loved. In so many of the paintings,It's a combination of beautiful washes of color and shadow, giving this dreamy feeling, and then amazing detail. In this painting, for example, there's this beautiful white and gray cloud of smoke emerging from the pipe the old man holds in his right hand, and it's either being raised to his lips for another puff or being lowered after having just taken one. And the smoke surrounds the old man and blends into this dreamy gray fog background. But my eyes were drawn to two things immediately. The first is the crow's feet crinkle by the right eye of the old man.In the painting, it's a slight smile. It makes him look happy and content. And then I look closer and I see you've perfectly captured that translucent skin, the light that forms just under the left eyelid, just at the tip of his right eyelid. It's like you can see through that thin layer of skin because of the light. And I just wanted to know how you decide which areas get that kind of treatment. How do you decide that this is going to be incredibly detailed and the light's going to come through, and how do you do it?
高品质的话必须有精到的细节。
Well, high quality paintings must have the qualities of subtle details.
这细节都要为整体感觉服务。
The details must serve the whole painting.
这张整体就是阳光和快乐。
Well, this picture suggests sunshine, something warm and happiness.
所以人一兴奋的时候，像你一笑，下边就堆起来了。
When people are smiling, when people are happy, then you can naturally see the change of this part.
还有的人注意到那个眼皮。
Some people have noticed the feeling of the transparent skin of this part.
就通过这小小的细节也在表现阳光。
This subject is a shepherd he met in Shanbei
province.
Are you painting from memory? Are you painting from photographs?
当场拍了几个角度。
He took a lot of pictures, and when he went back to his studio, he examined the pictures. No one is satisfying, so he had to combine different elements with his own imagination. For example, the smoke rising is in his mind.
I want to talk about burdened. Burdened is the old woman carrying the load of firewood. And first off, I want this painting. How much do you want for it? Will I have to mortgage my home?
他第一个你听这个话，要多少钱？我想买一下。
你想想，怀斯的画要多少钱吗？ Andrew Weiss.
And my wife. Andrew Wyeth.
Same.
Yeah. No, the clarity is so beautiful. I immediately thought of that type of, I like Andrew Wyeth's work very much and the details. And this painting just blew me away. Was this image taken from the same province?
The subject is from Yunnan province in the southwest of China.
这个画很有意义。
Do you know the plant which is used to make sweet or sugar?
Sugar cane.
Sugar cane.
Sugar cane.
Sugar cane.
Yeah. 但是要付出为子女的努力。
Why it is very meaningful, even for me. Now I can understand some part of it. Well, the load is very heavy. You have to carry it on. It is difficult for anyone.But the sugar cane is at the same time very sweet. So you load it, but maybe you are sweet inside.
Guanwei Xing's paintings are truly amazing, and we have Ambleside Gallery in Greensboro to thank for allowing us to view them in person. Today, his work is represented exclusively in the U.S. by Ambleside. Gallery owner Jackson Maysharp says his association with Guanwei Xing began, as so many do, by a chance meeting. Jackson, from Dunhua County to Ambleside Gallery in Greensboro, that's a long, that's quite a journey. How did your relationship with Guanwei Xing begin?
Well, it started with me.Well, for both of us, maybe 15 years back, I had a gallery in Michigan, and I was representing a Chinese artist, a watercolorist who was living in Canada by the name of Ye Chang Wang. I represented him in my gallery there in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. We became very close friends, And one day he had me over to his studio in Windsor, Canada, and we were having a conversation. And I noticed a small card stuck on the side of his computer that had on it an image of an old man. And it was, I could see that it was done in watercolor. And I was astonished. I had never seen such a beautiful watercolor painting. And I had specialized for many years in dealing in watercolors in England. So I asked Yecheng if he had any idea who had painted this, thinking he could have received this as a postcard or from a museum shop. So I was surprised when he said, oh, that was painted by my teacher. So I asked him, who is your teacher? And he said, well, his name is Guan Wei Xing, and he is the number one watercolor painter in China. This was about 15 years ago. So I was really astonished, and I asked if there are any other images that I could see. And he said, sure, come around and look on my computer. I have many. So I saw one after another, and I felt that I was in watercolor heaven. These were some of the most exciting watercolor works I had ever seen in my lifetime.
As someone with your trained eye, then, what stands out with Guan Weiqing's work for you? What grabs you immediately?
Well, immediately is his ability to capture the spirit of humanity, the character, the inner life of people. And it's not a matter of detail. It's not a matter of just a physical quality, but there is some magical quality about his work, and it's very difficult to explain. But I'm not the only one that has responded in this way. In fact, it was written in one article in China that many students in China were under the impression that his paintbrushes have magical powers. And they were trying to see if they could get hold of his paintbrushes to see if they could create the same kind of paintings.
That's great. I've got to end it there, Jackson, but what a wonderful story. Thank you so much for coming all the way out to be with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Ambleside Gallery owner Jackson Mayshark. Earlier we heard from internationally renowned watercolorist Guan Wei Xing. He was joined by his interpreter Wang Xiaolian. This is just Guan's third trip to the U.S., so it's really a rare opportunity to see an exhibition of works by a living world-class master watercolorist. Guan's work will be exhibited at Ambleside Gallery in Greensboro from Friday, July 17th through August 22nd, and you'll find links to the gallery and images of his work at WFDD.org. Just click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Today, we're taking a deep dive into the wonderful world of visual art. I know it's radio, but hey, it's still loads of fun, and coming up, it'll be two of today's leading contemporary artists and the incredible amount of careful thought that goes into creating art that really gets our gears spinning and the conversation jumping. Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art curator Cora Fisher is here to share her thoughts, too, next when Triad Arts Weekend continues after this short break. I sure hope you'll stay with us. Trust me, it's going to be fun. I'm David Ford. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend and our little Pictures at an Exhibition tour. So far, that tour has taken us to China. Next up, we begin our return home via Mexico. The work of Mexico City native and North Carolina-based artist Pedro Lash has been described as intersecting the international immigrants movement and the philosophies of critical pedagogy, radical democracy, and the coloniality of power. Tennessee native and North Carolina-based artist Jeffrey Oliver Whetstone uses photography and video to explore connections between man, nature, and masculinity. The Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art brings them both together, along with contemporary artists Haroon Farooqi, Leslie Hewitt, and Humana Mana for the exhibit Alternative Modernisms, Exploring History, the South, and Historical Traditions of Painting Through the Lens of Photography and Film. Jeff spoke with us by phone from his home in Tennessee, and he was joined in the studio by Pedro and SICA curator Cora Fisher.
So, I mean, I think in both of your work, we're talking about identity, we're talking about where we're from, where we're going, and a way that photography can help defamiliarize the way we typically arrive to an image, the way we come to an image, what we expect to find there. So for you, it's this engagement, which really happens in a space with other people co-creating the work, where they put on mirror masks and you see kind of self and other dissolve in that space, and this really complex play on reflection. Jeff, I think in your work and the New Wilderness series that is in this exhibition, Alternative Modernisms, we see, you know, the construction and the performance of a kind of idea or an identity of what does it mean to be Appalachian, and what does that look like, and how can the history of images help us play with those stereotypes or those biases that we have.
Yeah, and I think that is so succinctly put in the very first room of the exhibit when you're, before you kind of reach the exhibition proper. There's a mirror mask, and I think it's like a Renaissance painting in the background, and a person is wearing a mirror mask. It might be of a Jackson Pollock.
Yeah.
And it's kind of facing one of my pictures of this camouflaged man in a camouflaged face mask. So there's this really interesting pairing that I guess alone my photograph could be taken as some kind of documentation of a hunter. But with Pedro's work next to it, it really asks, the questions become much more about performance and how we kind of look at others. So the two works really support each other. And so the conversation we're having right now is, it's had kind of in a mute way between these two pieces of art in that front room.
Yeah, it's interesting to me too, because I'm a recent, you know, I'm an implant of sorts. I was born and raised in Mexico, then lived 9 years in New York, and now I've been for a longer period in North Carolina, over 12 years in Durham and now in Carrboro. And so I feel very much like I belong here. I feel at home here. My daughter is being raised here in a bilingual school. So there's a new bilingual South, you know, that's part of it. So there's that idea of belonging in the South. But there's what I see as the larger global South, you know. So there's really interesting ways to reinvent the North and criticize the North from here. What we're used to thinking, the American imagination, the U.S. imagination thinks of the North as this progressive site with all the advances and so on, and the South as this backward, you know, and it's such a pervasive construct that as much as, of course, we're critical of the racial and the histories of discrimination and so on, I'm always trying to fight these counterproductive, you know, notions. And for me, actually, what I've discovered in the South is a really fantastic place of reinvention, creativity, radical ideas, production. I mean, literature is a great example of that, all the amazing literature we have from the South. And so one thing that Jeff brought up that to me is also interesting to talk about, and it may seem like a tangent, but I don't think it is the notion of performance, because I think it brings us together. And we perform identity, right? It's something that labels, you know, stereotypes, etc., are subjected on us, but then we can do stuff with them and subvert them through performance, whether it's in everyday life or in art. And in the exhibition, one of the things that you may notice, hopefully not too obviously, is that I'm a terrible photographer. Jeff is a fantastic photographer. But one thing we're both, that bridges these, you know, this technical skill on the one hand and lack of skill in the other, is performance. We both care about how people perform, what they do in front of the camera, you know? And I'm jokingly saying that, but I actually am a bad photographer. What happens is that I've ended up in shows using photography because I do these performative things, and they end up being photographed, right? But I was trained as a painter, as a printmaker, I do installation, you know, and so I'm not against photography, just that's not my skill set, you know, and so I'm happy to show these photographs, but I don't even see them as photographs necessarily. I end up seeing them either as paintings or as documentation of some, where the core activity is a performance. But so I think that idea of how performance relates to the South to me is interesting.
Well, I'll say, you know, photography is still kind of a democratic medium. You know, it's you can play the guitar like you know, Jimi Hendrix or like Johnny Rotten. You know, like you can, and it still rocks. You know, sometimes that skill level can actually get in the way of I'm saying what you want to say, and photography is so fluid, and you know, speaking to especially issues like identity and performance, it's not like you have to know every little nook and cranny of how film gets developed. But to pick on something earlier that Pedro said, it was like, okay, so I grew up in the South my whole life, and I spent 2 years away when I was in grad school in New Haven, Connecticut. But what has happened in this technological age of representation, where everyone has a cell phone camera, and also everyone has a, seemingly like everyone is part of a reality show, whether it be on cable TV or their own Facebook post, there's some kind of reality performance going on, that the South has become, I think, in a lot of ways, flattened, that it's kind of performing itself. So that, well, lots of people think, oh, the South is full of, like, Duck Dynasty people, right? That it's, they're kind of dumb, but really wise, you know, bigoted, homophobic, really, you know, kind of repressive and traditional. And, yeah, there's that. But there's a myriad of other possibilities of being a rural person in the South. So I think what I want to do with my work is to unflatten that notion of what it means to be kind of a Southerner, and also how this kind of relates to the mirror mask. So in Appalachia, I don't know if this is true, but I think it might be the most documented place on earth as far as like having social realist documentaries made since the War on Poverty. Every photographer goes there and documents people, right? The poor, you know, the downtrodden. They've become very sophisticated on how their images play out in society. So they are very aware of their mirror mask, you know, to use Pedro's kind of terminology, that they wear, right? And so photographing Appalachian people, they're all postmodern in a way, in that they want to know how the image is being used, what their representation is going to be like. So the conversations I have with people who I photograph are fascinating, because they realize that they could subvert and also collaborate with my power as an image maker. So I think it's a very exciting time to be doing the work we're doing, because it seems like there's a notion out there that the difference between the signifier and the signified have diminished.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jeff, because for me, when I started this series about, I guess, more than 10 years ago already, the term naturalization has this specific notion of citizenship, right, as well as many others, you know, what is artificial, what is man-made, all these other things. But in terms of the citizenship one, my experience, I've also always been an immigration activist. But I got tired pretty quickly of all these people and artists who, with all the best intentions, wanted to represent undocumented immigrants, right? And they wanted to take their picture, and they thought that just in that act, like that there's that notion of giving people a voice, and a similar note, there's the idea of giving people an image, of representing them. When in fact, very often, people don't want their image pasted all over the place, or they recognize that it's the very state that can be repressive, who wants their ID, who kind of punish them for not having an official ID, you know, where that whole issue of whether you have a license or not, whether what has been made really impossible for people to get a license, you know, it all has to do with our face, you know, whether having a document that has our face on it. And so I think for me, the mirror mask was a way to work with people, but actually taking us to have deeper conversations that are not about our faces, you know, not about all the things that we inscribe in our faces. And take that to another population. One of the stereotyped constructs of the South is the black and white divide, which I think we're so past that in terms of the different groups that constitute the South, but also where people are, the reverse migration and so on. And that's another important element for me of the mask, that it temporarily, you know, displaces that the racial signifiers in our faces. And of course, there's the dark dimension of like the KKK hoods, all these other things we associate with people covering their faces in the South, you know. But to me, that's all a really powerful, rich set of, you know, subject matters that kind of are there.
I think it's interesting, the parallel, and I hope I'm not forcing this too much, in the civil rights movement and the photography, the photographic images, these iconic images of the protesters being hosed or attacked, set on by dogs, etc. There was an excellent exhibit in Haynes Gallery here last year about this time. It's Martin Berger in his Freedom Now exhibition. He had gone back and revisited photos from the civil rights era from the lens of the African-American press at the time, and interviewed those who were being hosed and what was really going on. And the dynamic there was these stories were being told by a white press sympathetic to civil rights movement, and in order to engender more support from the legislators, from the populace, they only chose the most victimhood images of blacks being persecuted, when it really didn't tell the story of the strength of the organization that went behind that. None of the photos of blacks, for example, fighting back were ever published, because that would go be the antithesis of what the establishment was trying to achieve. So I think in there's some parallel in there in terms of the power of image for good and for bad.
Yeah. I think it's a really good example that you raise. And also Wesley Hogan, who's the director of the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University, came and talked about some of the photographs in alternative modernisms, and specifically civil rights imagery as it relates to the work of Leslie Hewitt. Again, all of the artists in this show, both of you, Pedro and Jeff, really thinking about how the camera has ushered in this new kind of agency with representation, and also how we continually have to reinvent the way that we reframe history, or we look at an image, or whether that's art history or this question of identity and who we are. I think that's kind of the tradition or the legacy of the camera that modernism is defined by, that machine, that continues even in this age of, for lack of a better word, globalization and the internet. These are the kinds of moments we go back to, is when the camera first kind of came onto the scene and really disrupted the way that we think about images and how they're available and how they can be reproduced.
Well, and I think another, just like only the victim or the image of the victim can be the one that is used, you know, by those in power, there's other mechanisms in which we keep being excluded from certain conversations. And what Jeff brought up earlier of the formalism, like I think many of the artists, in fact, every artist who you've included in this exhibition, Cora, are actually people very consciously working with formalism and the history of aesthetics and so on. But we're also artists who have been we belong to intellectual traditions that have been excluded, to populations that have been excluded, many of us, you know, not all of us, but I think even Haroun Farhoki has an interesting history with that. And so to me, it's important to remain a formalist, but without kind of abdicating and abandoning, you know? Like, what does a Latino artist do with the fact that Latinos are not allowed, Chicanos are not allowed to be formalists to this date, you know? What does a Southern artist do, you know?
Yeah.
Same with these international exhibitions that we're a part of. Like, what we do accept participating in them, but I tend to do so under protest, you know? Like, with the being a formalist, but a formalist with a twist. And if you abandon the twist, and I think I often feel like it's a bit of a cop-out, you know, if we lose that edge, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. We talk about formalism, and even, like, formalism with a camera, and kind of getting back to what Pedro said about his skill as a photographer versus my skill as a photographer. It's really, that's kind of a moot point, because the way I think Pedro is photographing these performances is from this very vernacular way you would photograph a performance. You know, it's a handheld, kind of a loose way to photograph. So that really talks to how photography is being done now, you know, the current state of photography. And I think the way I'm photographing my work is I'm really using like a 19th century model to investigate my subject matter. So the 19th century model has these aesthetic codes and this kind of relationship to truth that's very complex, right? Because it's all set up, but since it's so austere looking, like it looks like it comes from the past, we automatically think that there must be some kind of allegiance to truth and factuality. We're making stylistic choices, which are really formal choices, to articulate the theory behind the work.
That's a very rich contradiction that I hadn't thought about between the work and others, also other pieces in the show, but specifically in our the selections of our work that Cora included, because there's definitely this kind of 19th century tradition of photography and aesthetics in your work. But what we're looking at is the present, right? So that can people,
right.
It's kind of a trap, right? And in mine, it's kind of, you have paintings that often belong in the 19th century or at least in the tradition of the last two centuries, mm-hmm. right? National Gallery, the Washington, et cetera. And ironically, the closest aesthetic equivalent to it is the selfie. Like I kept telling people the only way to use this mirror mask is with other people because you need the other. And then a teenager told me, no, actually, I just took a selfie, you know? And they're like, I guess I hadn't considered the selfie.
So your work literally got ushered into the 21st century by a tween, which is amazing. Yeah. But I think also all of the artists in this show, all of you guys are setting forth proposals of new photography and what it can look like. And so it really runs the gamut, Pedro, from yours being much more in a relational space of performance and social engagement. You know, Jeff, you're very self-consciously kind of using this look and this, as you're saying, this formalist style of an earlier part of the century where science and art are kind of closer together. You know, we have Jumana Mana and Leslie Hewitt working with archival research practices and restaging or reenacting history. And, you know, Leslie is using photography as sculpture, basically leaning things on the wall, thinking about the material of the photograph. So it really runs the whole gamut. And I think that's what's so interesting about contemporary art is this ability to kind of look back and survey the past, but to really give it that twist where it becomes something that's speaking to our time and from our times.
Jeff, one of the images that kind of speaks to that for me from the formalist perspective was you and a fish, a self-portrait.
Yeah.
It reminded me of turn of the last century photos I've seen of, you know, catfish hunters. And yet it seems so, there's a power in there, the fact that it's you who being photographed and it's this fish and it's black and white and you're looking at the camera in such a way that it could it be 1930s? Could it be 2015? And similarly, Pedro, in Dining Room 1, looking at this photo of a 200-year-old painting on the wall juxtaposed against someone with a mirror reflecting an image of another painting in front, which is a very modern kind of aesthetic, it's just so appropriate and so powerful in the same sort of, I'm feeling it in a very similar way. I wonder if either of you or both of you could speak to just that appropriateness, for lack of a better way of putting that. How does it work so well? And I guess what sorts of things are you hoping the viewer gets when they walk away from having seen an image like that? I'll use those two as examples and throw it your way first, Jeff.
Yeah, and I wish Leslie Hewitt was in on this conversation too, because it would be really interesting how we all three have very unique but similar takes on the past. So the fish picture that you mentioned, it's a self-portrait with catfish. My family archive is, you know, I could say almost 20% of my family archive is men holding fish.
What does it mean?
What does it mean?
You have fish in the family?
So I really set out to make a selfie with an 8x10 camera of me holding a fish, and I wanted it to be a catfish at night. And also kind of wanted to be a little bit half drunk when I did it, because that's how you catfish. you stay up all night and drink. So I made this contraption with this 8x10 large format camera where I stepped on this little trigger that triggered the strobes and the shutter. And I tried to be in this, well, actually I was trying to hold the catfish from, you know, keep it from spiking me and slipping out of my hands. And it was so much of that picture, the time of that picture was so much of what I love about the South. It was a hot August night. It was like one of these 89-degree nights in the middle of the night. And the humidity was outrageous. There were bugs everywhere. Everything smelled like fish and bugs. And it was just being an animal in that context was just so powerful, you know. It was like, wow, this, I'm, you know, mammals are not the ultimate animal in this context. You know, it'd be better to be a fish, insect, or reptile. So anyway, I wanted to kind of capture that glimmering wetness of everything and pay homage to all my grandfathers on both sides and uncle's pictures of the fish portrait. So there's this very present of the time of year, of the place, and there's this reflection on the past, this trope of the male with fish. Yeah. And so that's how I kind of bridge past and present with that.
Yeah.
And in a way, I mean, there's literally that idea of the catch, right? You know, which in that image of, you know, when ironically with this series of interventions with Amerimass, even though I've been working with the project for over 10 years, most of the interventions are not even photographed. They're in social settings where there is no art on the wall. They happen in, you know, grassroots settings, all kinds of contexts. One has happened in the London Eye inside of that Ferris wheel in London, you know. Uh-huh. And so this was actually the recent intervention in the last year or two in Washington, but also here at Reynolda, that was part of what curated at SICA. You know, there was this collaboration with the Reynolda House, and that's the image that you're referring to. It's happening at Reynolda. Is actually quite, it's an exception in the series. And the idea is that people reflect existing artworks, you know, they reflect history through this idea of the artifact, of the painting. And so that brought in a kind of a whole new set of concerns for me that were latent in the work, they were conscious for me, but for the audience now they've become much clearer. But one of the things that relates to the catch is that you have to be incredibly still. You have to work with a photographer, with your partner, these images were all created between pairs of people. And so the image you referred to is basically one person telling the other how to stand exactly. And there's only one perfect moment and one perfect mm-hmm. angle in which you can see that reflection, right? And that's the moment of the catch, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the fish, you know, so kind of, you know, so except the fish is here on the person's face, a bit like in a Magritte painting, it could be, you know. But of course, the setting is the ultimate contradiction of what Jeff just described in terms of nature and how inappropriate humans are, you know, or mammals in general. And here we are in this house that was constructed to be the ultimate human, you know, house by the Reynolds, one of the richest families of its time, you know, with this fantastic organ and all this amazing artwork, like a refuge from nature, away, even though the bungalow has a bit of a mixed, you know, definition in that. There is this idea of the museum and the house as everything other than nature, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting how these things can play out. Mm-hmm. I mean, for Cora, I actually, it wasn't until seeing how the exhibit, you know, started coming together that I realized with what kind of depth and richness you were constructing these notions of, like, expectations that people have of photography, you know? Honestly, it's an honor to be in an exhibit, not just with artists like Jeff and Leslie, but Haroon Farooqui, who unfortunately passed away recently, one of my favorite artists. And one of the things that I think all of us share is this idea, and you share as a curator, is this idea of living in the present, but mm-hmm. being very conscious of your past and not sacrificing one for the other. In fact, mm-hmm. seeing them as built together. And the other thing that I think all of the work shares is this idea of the familiar made strange and the strange made familiar, mm. right? Which I mm-hmm. love in a lot of art that I absolutely. Respect.
Yeah, yeah.
You said it so well.
Artists Pedro Lash, Jeffrey Oliver Whetstone, and curator Cora Fisher. The Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art exhibition Alternative Modernisms continues through August 16th. It, like all of the amazing exhibits going on at SICA, is free and open to the public. You'll find links to images of Jeff and Pedro's work and more at WFDD.org. Just click on Triad Arts Weekend. Alternative Modernisms also features the work of contemporary artists Haroon Farooqui, Leslie Hewitt, and Humana Mana. It'll remain on display at SICA through August 16th. Time for another short break before we return with even more great artistic happenings going on in your neck of the woods next, when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Thank you.
Welcome to Try It To Do. I'm Bethany Chafin here with David Ford. And today we have a special guest, our morning edition host, Neil Charnoff. His voice will be very familiar to you all. But today you get to hear him in a sort of a different format. So,
I'm so excited to join you guys.
Welcome. The one and only.
We're happy to have you making a bit of a cameo appearance today.
Great to be here.
So as the guest, I'll let you start things off. What do you have for us today?
Well, do I have a play for you? This is a play called Bat Boy the Musical. You guys know the Weekly World News. This is a tabloid newspaper, which kind of makes the National Enquirer look like the New York Times. Okay, so this play is based on a Weekly World News story from